Call this meeting to order of the Longmont Housing Authority Advisory Board. Erica, can you do a quick roll call for us?
Yes, definitely. So board members present, we have Tom DeBee, Jean Christopher, Arlene Zortman, and Lauren Selly. Others present, we have Harold Dominguez, Karen Roney, Molly O'Donnell, Kendra Daniels, Lisa Gallinar, and Sarah Arney.
Thank you. Next up on the agenda, number two, approval of the minutes from the January 18th, 2022 meeting. Can we get a motion?
A motion to approve.
I have a second. All right, so it's a motion by Lauren, Arlene, seconded. Any discussion, any changes on it?
Yes,
go ahead, Arlene.
So in section 5A under the second bullet point, it's just kind of a question, sort of an understanding thing here. On conversation number two under personal engagement, it says, how can we ensure that all personal interactions are genuine and compassionate? And here we're just saying it's between the LHA staff and residents. And I thought we talked about between resident and resident as well. Am I making sense?
I believe so. So that was, what bullet point was that, sorry?
The second bullet point.
Second one, okay.
Yeah.
So you'd kind of, you would like to revise that to have it read LHA staff when interacting with residents as well as resident to resident?
Yes, I think so, because I think that's what was one of the concerns was regarding gossiping and everything like that, that the resident to resident interaction needed to be nice.
Okay.
So Arlene, this is Karen. Arlene is correct. So we can certainly make that clarification since it is a broader conversation.
Thank you.
Any other changes?
No.
Nope. All right. Seeing those, so we'll just change that motion slightly to approve the minutes with that change to 5A bullet point two to added as well as resident to resident. Let's vote. For approval, please raise your hand. Passes unanimously. Next on the agenda, number four, organizational updates, 4A, revisit regular meetings, date and time for any changes. And this is kind of my thing. I would, if everybody's okay with it.
Kinda, hey, Tom?
Yeah, go ahead.
We actually have to do the public invited to be heard.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Number three. Thanks for that, Laura.
No problem.
Erica, was there anybody from the public that wanted to be heard?
Don't have anybody now.
All right. So now we're going to 4A. I am proposing, if everybody's okay with it, a 9 a.m. meeting rather than an 8 a.m. Does anybody have any conflicts with that? No? Okay.
I'm good.
All right. Perfect. Okay. So I
is it going to stay the same Tuesday of every month, just at 9 a.m.
I just wanted to make it as easy as possible. Like I can get my son to the bus basically and then make the meeting at 9 o'clock, no problem. So if we just push it back an hour, that'll give me plenty of time for that. So I move we change our meeting for the LHA advisory board to 9 a.m. same Tuesday as currently stated.
I'll second.
Okay. We got a motion and a second. Any discussion needed? Seeing none, if approval of the motion, please raise your hand. Passes unanimously. So next one, 4B, proposed changes to process for interviewing LHA advisory board members.
Tom, I'll go ahead and take that one if that's all right.
Yep.
So this evening on the council agenda is staff has, based on actually a council request, is recommending a change in the process for how council selects advisory board participants. And in essence, what is, you know, what is being recommended, and, you know, the full document is on the website for tonight's council meeting, if you want to review that, and actually I can send a link to that after the meeting, is basically to have more current advisory board member participation in that process. So in essence, and there's probably more detail than this, but in essence, the what is being suggested that council consider is that there would be kind of a screening interview process by the current board members for applicants who apply for, so in this case would be for the Lamont Housing Authority Advisory Board. And the recommendation would be there would be no more than two representatives from the board for basically for open meeting purposes to work with the advisory board liaison to do basically pre-interviews of the applicants who apply for the advisory board. And then at that point in time, the advisory board would make recommendations to city council about which applicants to, select, or that pass that first level of screening, if you will. And then my understanding is that at that point in time, city council would only interview those board members that are applicants that are recommended by the advisory board. They could certainly interview more, they could interview less, you know, whatever. So, but they would consider the recommendations from the sitting advisory board in determining how they're going to move forward with further interviews for those candidates. What I just sent you early this morning, because I didn't put it in the packet, was the list of current questions that the council members ask of applicants for the Lamont Housing Authority Advisory Board. These questions were, I think, developed by the board and by some of the staff liaisons. And so we would have the opportunity, if there are different questions that you would want to ask, you know, you certainly can do that. But what is being recommended is whatever we ask are those questions are consistent with each applicant. And so for right now, you know, the questions really have to do with, you know, what do you know about affordable housing? What people, what applicants think about the key roles of a board member serving on the Lamont Housing Authority Advisory Board? And the kind of the purpose of the Lamont Housing Authority, the greatest strengths and skills that the candidates would bring to the advisory board, and just some ideas about what they think some of the challenges might be today and moving forward with the advisory board, and then ending with what's the greatest hope that you have for the work and for the future of the Lamont Housing Authority. So those are the existing questions right now. It looks like we do need to modify these, because I think these were developed when council was interviewing applicants for the governing board, which is a little bit different. So we'll have opportunity to come back and maybe at our next meeting and update and refresh those questions that you would want to ask based on if indeed council provides that direction tonight to city staff about going forward in this direction. They might say, heck no, we don't want to do this. So what we wanted to do is just to give you a heads up that this is in the hopper and this will be discussed tonight at the council meeting. And if indeed we get the direction to move forward in this fashion, then we will bring back some further conversation about questions and how you would want to organize the process based on the direction that we get. Harold, did I miss anything or?
No, other than we'll know more tonight. We just wanted to let you all know this was coming. If they go with our suggestion for mid-year recruitments, the board interviews will be the month of May at some point based on the schedule the clerks put together. But all of this is subject to change based on what they direct tonight. So.
Yep. Thank you for the heads up. And is this a kind of a hope just so that it kind of whittles down some of the applicants as well? So the city council doesn't have to review as many. Is that the hope?
I think it's partially.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's partially that. I think it's partially they want a more in-depth sort of recommendation from the boards and the staff that are going to be working with individuals to ensure that people really understand what the work is that they're going to be undertaking. And so I just think they want to bring more due diligence into this process to and for prospective applicants to hear, well, here's how much work goes into it, or here's who you're going to contact. So I think all of that's, there's some best hopes all over this.
That sounds like a good idea. Any other comments? All right, let's go on to 4C, overview collaboration between LHA and public safety.
So I will also introduce this, Tom, if that's all right. The you know, Lisa, who had a birthday yesterday, if you could tell, on Valentine's Day. So she has a very festive office. And then this will be a discussion and presentation by Lisa and by Sarah Arney, who is works with public safety. She's one of our master police officers. Her background isn't as festive today, but we thought we wanted to do is just to update the advisory board on the housing authority and the partnership with public safety and how that really has evolved over the past couple of years, and just for them to provide some updates and opportunity for the advisory board to ask any questions about what we're up to. So it's been a really invaluable relationship and collaboration between LHA and public safety. And we wanted to just share a little bit of information about that. So I would say take it away, Sarah and Lisa.
All right, Lisa, do you want me to start?
Go for it.
Great. Well, thanks for inviting me today. I wanted to start off with, hi Jean, it's been some time since I've seen you. Good to see you, but not really on the computer. wanted to give you all a background on the crime-free housing program. That's what really enabled this relationship. And this May, it'll be 12 years that crime-free housing program's been in Longmont. That's incredible in my opinion, in the strides we've made and the things we've done. But really this program is based upon relationships in the housing industry itself. And it's a very vast industry, as you all know, I'd assume. So how we collaborate with LHA really is through several avenues, whether that be property safety, residents that might have some behavioral issues, community meetings, ensuring the folks that are living in these properties have the information they need regarding any public safety issue, and really working with Lisa as a regional manager intricately with every property regarding all these different things that come up. I can get into more specifics, but I would like Lisa to be able to chat about what her thoughts are, and I can give you guys some examples of how we've made some positive impacts.
I would say, first, our relationship with the police department has gotten so much better from what I've heard.
having the police presence on site, Sarah visiting these sites, walking the sites, interacting with the residents, being part of these coffees and conversations we had, and having that positive relationship with the residents has really gone far the last year. Sarah's been a great asset along with Dave and the Crime Free program, as they've been able to assist us with evictions, helping us navigate how to keep these people off our properties once we're evicted, working through welfare checks, working through different agencies, even within the public safety department. I just drew a blank on all this. But it's been a great relationship. It's come far. All of our properties have now been inspected for the crime-free, so we're moving that way. All of them should be completely SEPTED certified, probably here by the end of spring. We just have a few minor things to do at a couple of the communities that we are working on.
Lisa, can I butt in and maybe explain that piece a little bit better? Yeah. So when she says SEPTED, that's an acronym that stands for Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. And that is, it's actually a certification that Dave and I have that we have to keep up. And it's really not rocket science, but what it comes down to is having the education and base knowledge of security of property. We've done assessments on schools. We've done assessments on churches. So it really doesn't, if it's a built structure, we can basically do or conduct a SEPTED inspection, we call it. So all of the crime-free properties in our program, which are about 230, have been inspected. Our relationship with the manager is to ensure that those things that we look at, like lighting, landscaping, a few things on the internal side, like what kind of window locks you might have. On the new builds, all these things are really just built in. It's the old properties that they have to go back and basically, change out a few things like the locks, or maybe it's time to upgrade and get new windows. So really basic stuff like that. And so all of the LHA properties have been inspected. And I also sit on the DRC for the city and review the plans prior to.
Sarah, you might want to say what that acronym stands for.
Oh, I'm sorry. Development Review Committee. So the city has staff that a development review committee that reviews all planning for new builds. And that's a full-time job if I were to do that full-time, but I do all the multifamily properties that are coming in, which are quite a few. So it's really nice to meet these folks ahead of time, be able to give them some of a public safety perspective and some suggestions on, what are we seeing as far as current trends and issues on properties. We aren't fire code, which that means a builder doesn't have to do anything that we ask, but our city staff has really embrace this, what we're doing and what we're trying to do. So they've actually helped out tremendously. Planning and development help our program tremendously as far as, making this a very high, priority, so to speak, as far as when they start to build. So I just wanted to touch on that real quick. So when the new building next to the suites gets built, same with Chrisman, I'm a part of that. And that's, I think for, as a, police officer, city staff member, I really embrace those opportunities personally, because I feel like I've got, a seat at the table, so to speak.
Okay, Sarah? And Lisa both, are the managers still attending the crime-free training that we used to have every other year? Okay, that's still going on. Okay.
Jean, and I didn't break down requirements, but real quick, this is a free program to anyone that wants to join. It's not mandatory. Some cities and municipalities make this program mandatory, and it does change mm-hmm. rental properties across municipalities citywide. Right. Longmont hasn't pushed for that. Needless to say, we have a lot of folks that are in our program and they have to come to an 8-hour training, and that's a long day for folks, but super valuable. Gene could probably mm-hmm. attest to that yeah. as it well. Mm-hmm. Yes, so everyone on the LHA staff has been to our training, except Adam, because he's new.
Yes. Okay. Oh, also, Sarah, what about, are you still doing landlord-tenant, the meetings once a month?
We are. That's now going on 12 years as well. So
okay.
we're doing that the second Wednesday of every month at 6:30, and that's still online.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So part of it too, just so you know, Friday meetings, Sarah's giving her report in combination with Lisa. They're talking about what they're doing. So every Friday, we're getting briefed on what's going on at all the properties. And it lets us kind of dig in a little bit on issues. And sometimes there may be issues that are not necessarily police related, but touch police and code enforcement. And so then Sarah's facilitating the conversation with other groups as we're moving through. And so completely different operational profile now versus what happened, but it's basically highlighted with Lisa and Sarah constantly communicating with each other and staying on the same page. And so really more of our Fridays have now shifted to here's what we're dealing with and here's what we've come up with to solve the issues. And then we ask a couple of questions versus, you know, truly digging into it. Or it may be another issue we're aware about that we dig into, but then we push to them. And so the communication's been phenomenal in terms of how we deal with situations.
And for those of you that aren't familiar with the program itself, property managers and LHA specifically get any calls for service that may happen on property. They'll get that the next day. So if I'm at work, which Monday through Friday, pretty much am paying attention what's going on with the radio. If it's like a fire or something like that, I'm calling right away. But as far as like just a noise disturbance or maybe a trespassing issue, those are notifications that folks get every day. So that's I think valuable to Lisa and the LHA managers. And then we just touch base and follow up on next steps.
Piggyback off that, because we're getting the calls for service daily. So I'm keeping kind of a list of who's even for situations at like the Suites, Aspen Meadows neighborhood, other properties. If we start seeing the same household come up multiple times, then Sarah and I are having deeper conversations. Do we need to get CORE involved? Do we need to refer to Adult Protective Services depending on the situation? And we're walking through these situations, trying to avoid bigger situations and kind of being proactive on these. And I think a lot of this has shown in our calls for service. I think when I started, the Suites was having 20 plus a week. Now most of them are just welfare checks, maybe 2 or 3 a week.
Yeah, the calls I would say have gone down tremendously. So I've been working with LHA prior to the city taking over. I can tell you the relationship, obviously I've worked with some of the city staff for a long time, but I just think that where LHA is now, I mean, this is kind of an outside perspective, where it is now versus where we were. I think I'm being utilized to the extent that I knew that LHA had the capacity to use, if that makes sense. I think there's more to properties and people living in rental properties than just, oh, well, the police were called here. I think that, you know, what we also carry too with us is a very vast knowledge in landlord-tenant law. And for police, police don't study civil law. I've really had to wrap my brain around civil law and it's ever so changing, especially with the state and a lot of the things that they've done in the last 2 years. So keeping up on that, whereas, you know, if you're going to call patrol and ask for a welfare check or something that may seem like it's a little bit out of the ordinary, Dave and I can come in and really assess that to the extent of what's legal, what can we do? And I think that that's very important as property managers to understand that. And I think that's where they also gain value in utilizing and being a part of this program.
So Lisa, with you mentioned CORE was a program that you would refer them to. What is that exactly?
I'll let Sarah take that.
So CORE is our, and that's an acronym, and I butcher it all the time. Basically we have two teams in public safety, and it consists of a law enforcement officer, a paramedic, and a mental health clinician. And those folks respond to right here, right now, crisis for folks in Longmont. Whether they're, you know, having a mental health problem, they respond to things outside of the box too. Maybe there's a kid in school that has really caused some problems, and it's escalated to the awareness of the school resource officers, for example. They'll a lot of times call CORE. CORE is used often, and they respond to properties often. And we're building a third team, and I know our chief wants to move to a fourth team eventually. So we have 24/7 coverage. Right now we don't have that, but is that pretty much the gist of it?
So then and do they respond then to the welfare checks as well then to the units? Is that who typically does it, or is it?
It depends. That's a situation, like if we have knowledge that there's mental health history, you know, do we have knowledge? It really is situational dependent, but they oftentimes will respond on welfare checks.
And then in terms of the certification, is it on an annual basis this has to be done, or is it you're good for 5 years? How does that work?
What certification are you talking about?
I thought you were saying this was a certification for
crime free.
Oh, the crime free, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They are, as being in the crime free program, they have to, the property managers have to attend the 8-hour, and then every other year they have to come to a 4-hour. And that's really about legal updates and trends in Longmont and working with police. That's the last 4 hours of our training. And then as far as the properties themselves and the residents, we require a community meeting every other year. I have some folks that like to have them every year. So it really, we leave that up to management, but we have to do it every other year. You know, properties are very, rentals are very transitory. I know a lot of LHA properties, we have some long-term residents there. So that's fantastic. But most of the time we experience the fact that people move out. We want to get in there. We want to have a relationship built with them, build that trust, and they see our face. They have a contact if there's a problem, and they can move forward knowing that they're confident in the fact that, man, management's working with these folks. And Jean might be able to speak to that a little more because she's experienced both sides of that coin, but that's really the basics of it.
So Tom, I think the one thing that I would add is that, one of the things that we really have been trying to focus on is the successful tenancy of all of our residents, because it is certainly, it's good for our residents, it's good for the housing authority. And so I think through our enhanced partnerships with public safety and other collaborators, that we really are looking at how do we notice things first? How do we notice things early? And oftentimes they are behavioral, on kind of behavioral health issues. So how do we get things on our radar quicker and are in a position to, you know, respond in a way that we can intervene and maybe help people be successful in their housing or prevent things from escalating. And also I think our consultation with public safety is around, I mean, at some point in time, you know, we do have to, you know, terminate, you know, someone's lease if things have gone, you know, too far. So it's really a good consultation relationship. We try to bring the skills and expertise of property management and behavioral health, you know, together to really try to help folks be successful in their tenancy. And I think the other thing that public safety helps us do is to, you know, navigate. So if we need, so who do we need to bring forward to address this particular thing or to make an improvement that we want to make? You know, Sarah, and then she's mentioned David, that's David Kennedy, who's also in the, you know, an officer with our crime-free program that, you know, they can also help us with that navigation. So I don't know if there's any other questions or if Sarah and or Lisa want to, if there's a particular success or story that you want to share that illustrates how we work well together or not, don't have to,
Karen, I'll pick up on that. And one of the things that I experienced when I was managing was that vast majority of residents were comforted by the fact that we had a relationship with Sarah, and there were a couple of other police officers that the residents got to know by name. And it was, it really increased the comfort level knowing that the police are approachable and quote unquote on our side, as opposed to Big Brother-ism. And there were a couple of times, probably more than two, you might remember, Sarah, where our video cameras actually helped in solving issues, let's put it that way. Okay, but the partnership is strong and I'm glad to see it developing again. I've been a little concerned over the past 3 years because management's been so patchwork. And I'm glad to see this developing and coming on board because it really is a very important arm of maintaining a good, stable, and safe resident environment.
I can just bring, it's not really an example, but one thing I can say, LHA, when I was talking earlier about how they could utilize us more, I see, like Karen was talking about, this collaboration and really consultation piece. You know, I always try, and this is, you know, work smarter, not harder. And I see that a lot in the folks that I work with in law enforcement. It seems like it's all about, you know, let me just run this myself versus let's getting everyone at the table. And so I've seen LHA really utilize me a lot more in every situation, really. And I think that's just invaluable, whether it be me or someone else, just the knowledge that we can pass on and some of the experiences that we've seen in properties in the last 12 years is, I think it's just going to help LHA grow to what I see becoming, I would say, I don't want to, you know, put the cart before the horse, but I see so much opportunity for LHA and the residents here in Longmont, much more than I did before. So
Yeah, it's great to see that. Yeah, you and Lisa have a great relationship, and you know, like what Lisa said earlier, kind of the proof is behind the number of suites calls that we were getting in the past compared to now, and being more proactive than reactive to some of those situations. And like Jean said, it's really, you know, public safety is for our residents is one of our core goals as well. So any other comments from anybody? No? All right, let's go on then to number five, development and project updates, assignment with alignment with goals. A is proposed ARPA investments. Karen or Harold?
So I'll start this. So, and then Harold can finish it. what I did include in your, what we did include in your, excuse me, in your packet is the recommendations that Harold brought to the Longmont City Council in January of this year with how to spend the city's 12.9, almost $13 million in ARPA funding, and as well as then what amount of dollars would the city leverage from its other resources to bring forward some of these goals. So I think what we wanted to do is, we don't have to go over into in detail necessarily unless you have questions for Harold, but we wanted to just bring that forward. Many of those, particularly the development projects, so a huge investment in the city's ARPA funding, nearly $8 million of the $13 million is to address the city's and certainly the Longmont Housing Authority's affordable housing goals. And so I think we got the go ahead, you know, from City Council to move forward. And so just thought it might be good to confirm, you know, where we're headed. And so then take it away, Harold and Molly. Yeah.
So the you can see on the list the different types of projects, a couple of things. You see next slide, bulk agreements. It's something we've been working on to get internet access for everyone, obviously not construction. But what we're going to do is we'll seed money this for three years, and then we can gradually build it into the rent structure so we can have these bulk agreements in place for next slide. I'm going to take you to the first two projects on the affordable housing side, Sunset Heights. Chrisman Development, Sunset Heights is the project adjacent to the suites. We are in for the tax credit component with DOH. And Chaffa, we're in that process now. Molly, we should know by what day?
It should be April-ish, but yeah, the application went in February 1st for 9% tax credits.
So that's a 9% competitive tax credit program. So we put 1.3 in. In the event that we don't get the 9%, it gives us some options to essentially recreate that structure via investment in the financial model. We also put $800,000 into Chrisman Development. The numbers tend to be moving all over the place based on construction costs. And so we are back in front of DOH asking for some additional assistance. Hopefully we will hear something in the near future, but we are finalizing the LOI. We actually were in a meeting yesterday. That'll be finalized tomorrow. So our goal is really probably by the end of the year to have those two projects under construction. They're a little bit different. I would say Sunset Heights is probably a more traditional look at it. Chrisman, there's it's less traditional in terms of how we're structuring the agreement so that we can take over management responsibilities and some other things. And so hopefully those two are going to continue moving. I was trying to explain someone else, they go, well, it takes so long, what's going on? It's kind of this back and forth thing when you're moving in the development cycle in the development world, in terms of, you know, you come in, you put your plan together, you understand what your capital stack's going to look like. you start building it, they change a tax credit component on you a little bit. So you have to back up, kind of figure that out, or pricing changes on you as you're moving forward. So then you have to back up and figure that gap. And so when you're really moving in this development stage, it's a lot of this as you're trying to resolve these issues, but you continue to move forward. Couple of things in here. We did put $1.7 million in seed money to try to find a partner for an affordable assisted living component, and then $1.5 million for an unhoused option, of which we don't know what it is. We just know that we need it. So if you look at this year and you see Sunset Heights, Chrisman, you also see the re-syndication of Village Place. Three pretty big projects coming forward. Once we get the first two done, we're really going to be looking at the development of the Hover property, which is adjacent to the Lodge in Hearthstone. And that'll be hopefully working with some of these manufactured housing groups to get that work, to get that done. So IndyDwell is the one that I know Molly and I visited, we're pretty interested in. It's kind of hard to get that one started because we need to get these first two done. And then you can obviously see the Project Mustang. We purchased the 9 acres for affordable housing. We will begin conversations on the housing component once we actually get the Costco piece closed and everything, which should be in a couple of weeks. And then the owner of the property is the remaining parcels wanting to talk to us about how we're going to look at our 9 acres for affordable housing, but how he's also interested in attainable housing. So that's going to be a pretty large project, but we're going to be working collectively on that with Reggie Golden. So you can see a lot of projects starting to really pick up steam. Draw your attention to the bottom, staff development finance. That's staff, and that's positions that we need, because obviously we would like to move quicker, but we just don't have the bodies right now. I mean, we're just in a body deficit, and so we can do what we can do. So we put about $500,000 in here for staff development and finance position, or positions, depending on how we structure. And then that's something that between the housing authority and the general fund, we'll look at how we basically fund those positions in perpetuity via general fund and housing authority dollars, and partnering on that. So a lot of work coming. The thing you can also see is purchasing mobile home, the Royal Mobile Home Park, which was adjacent to the St. Vrain and part of our flood recovery. We did get the money in there to do that for $3 million. So we're also acquiring a lot of property as we continue to move forward as well. To get these projects going.
I'll just add on that we have a development, like a development specialist position that has been posted. So we're accepting applications. So if you know anybody, share it. We do have a half-time accountant on board specifically to handle ARPA. So we've made a little bit of progress, but we need a good applicant to come in to help with the development and really speed up that process.
I had a question on the Chrisman side of it. Is that also included in there? We would take over management of their other facility as well?
Yeah, so, and that's part of what we're having to work through. We spent some time yesterday with some attorneys in terms of where we say it's still a moving target, because I think we had it earlier in there, but the investor essentially said we had it pretty close to stabilization in our initial agreement, and the investor said, no, you need to stabilize and then go out in time. And I think they said, what, 5 years? And then we're going to push back with 3 years. And two, Chrisman One, we're trying to hold to take it over at the original date, which would be in a couple of years, in terms of the management piece. And so those are the things we're still working through based on what the investor said in terms of Chrisman Two. But yes.
And then just the staff development finance, those are brand new positions that we don't have budgeted for, correct?
Well, they're budgeted with the ARPA money. And so they will be new positions that we haven't had money for that we do now, but that we will then incrementally start bringing in ongoing dollars so that we can keep those positions in perpetuity.
And they will be established right now as fixed term positions.
Right.
Given that ARPA funds are one-time investments. And as Harold mentioned, that gives us the opportunity to build in ongoing funding for that position, unless we decide we don't need it, but we're not thinking that's going to, we're thinking probably that will be a need on an ongoing basis. But for right now, they're established as fixed term.
And so really this year, I mean, you could see three major construction or rehabilitation projects going at the same time. And then once we get those going, we're going to start on the next set. And so if you remember the goal of 6 development projects in four years. So at some point in this, we're probably going to have probably 4 projects going at once, 4 to 5 at one time, just in different stages of development. So there's a lot of work coming. As Molly takes a deep breath.
So I was gonna say, breathe, like Molly.
Molly, I feel for you because, like, at BCHA, we've got 3 projects in various stages, and then we've got 3 project managers, and it's a lot of work. So I hope you guys are able to get this position filled. We're having a hard time getting positions filled too. It's across the board, but yeah. I feel for you. I get it.
Yeah. And we may have to pull some of our project managers that we use generally from the city. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4. We've actually got 5 going right now at different stages. Fun.
Well, luckily, in the way that we've set up the partnerships in some of them is that really we're heavily in right now on the financing negotiation, but then they are going to do the heavy lift when it comes to design and construction. So
mm-hmm.
So it's not as much as doing the full project management, but it's still a lot. So
yeah, the financial part's hard. The construction and design is the fun part.
Yeah.
So hopefully you get to help out on the fun stuff too eventually.
Well, Village Place does offer the opportunity for that. So
yeah.
Do you know if any of these projects are going to apply for Worthy Cause funds from the county for soft cost?
No, probably not. We don't like the terms, honestly, okay, the county has in terms of 90, what is it?
I think it's like a 99-year term.
Yeah, from that's sort of our last resort if we need to make a capital stack work. And so to give you a sense on it was Chrisman, actually, that was something they threw out. And when we have the ARPA dollars, it's like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that because we're going to want maximum flexibility in terms of what we need to do. And so it's there, but it's typically our last choice. Is that a fair statement, Karen?
This is very exciting to see. So it's all going to be happening within the next couple of years. Any other comments on that? We can go on to Village Place re-syndication.
I can go ahead and take this one. So the current status is we have our property conditions assessment report in. It looks like the capital needs are in the range of $5.4 million, which actually the building itself is in quite good shape for its age. And then the parking lot does need a lot of work. So the next steps here are ramp up our finance, start coming up with budgets and work on getting our architect on board. So if you recall from what we reported after the kickoff meeting with residents in early January is the next big residential input opportunity that we're going to do, is as we have that architect on board and we're getting started on design and coming up with our wish list and our needs list. So that is the status there. Generally, the building is that, you know, the brick is in good shape. Overall, it's not a huge project on the building other than doing some reconfigurations to make it more useful for residents, but not necessarily structural problems, and kind of the big ticket items aren't as in dire need. That doesn't mean that they're not going to be part of the project, because we're looking for the 20-year horizon. So, but generally, that's what our capital needs assessment's showing. So we're really going to push forward on financing now is the next step.
And are we going to carve out the piece that is the that we lease out the to, can't remember the nonprofit name, but I think it's Disability Services over there?
So that is part of our financing discussions that we need to have, because we need to talk to CHAFA about the possibility of splitting that off, because that's what the goal is, to try and split that off and be able to separate the two, at least when it comes to the CHAFA. Tax credits. And then I want to let anybody else ask questions on the process, but I do want to turn it over to Lisa to give an update on a parking discussion that she had with residents yesterday. But if there's any other questions on the re-syndication process, where we are, I'd be happy to take those.
So yesterday I had my first meeting, which I'll touch base on a little bit more in the property updates, because we're bringing on a tow company / parking lot monitoring company, which is going to really play heavily for Village Place, because for years they've had issues with people visiting downtown, parking in their spots and all that. Every resident currently had, well, those who have vehicles have assigned parking spots. So we started the discussion yesterday, letting them know that these parking spots, the assignment of their parking spots, are going to slowly disappear over the next 6 months as we start bringing the contractors in. As we start working with architects, contractors, so that they are aware that they won't have that permanent parking spot forever.
So we know planted the seed.
We planted that seed yesterday, because that has been their biggest concern, because some of them have had assigned parking spots for 12 years. And they're like, well, I'm losing my parking spot. We're like, you are, but you're not. You're still going to be able to park back there. It's permit parking only. So if you don't have, if somebody parks back there who doesn't have a permit, their car will be gone. So
overall, Lisa, how did the residents respond?
Very well. I was actually really surprised, because they are my most vocal bunch when it comes to standing up for their community and their pride in their community. But most of them, I'd say 95% of them who attended, which was probably about 40 residents, were, okay, we understand. Yes, we need more handicap. We know we need to work on this parking lot. If this is going to make it better for everybody, then I'm in. So, and we've come up with some solutions. We're working with LDDA to possibly make a motorcycle parking lot or a parking space out front in the U shape between the spoke and us. We have a little weird parking spot. So LDDA is open to our discussion to make motorcycle parking. So I have two residents with motorcycles who would like to park up front and can share a space then. Sorry.
So I think it's feeding into our re-syndication process, because we, first of all, this is the only property with assigned parking. And so, and generally we cannot be assigning handicap spaces without a reasonable accommodation process is not the correct process. So we're just really going to get after the construction, we want the property to be operating similar to the others when it comes to parking. And of course, reconfiguring the parking to add more, it's all cycled together, including LDDA, who did confirm for us that the parking spaces that are a part of the construction zone for the spoke are going to be reopening in April. Did she say, Lisa? April?
End of March, early April, okay. When they get C of O.
And we did get some feedback from yesterday that we might have some residents that are interested in covered parking at the spoke, so, or in the parking garage associated with it. So we're gonna, at first we were, the feedback that we originally got that was like, maybe not, but we're gonna be including that in part of our resident surveys anyways, but we're gonna be using all of this information to come up with, you know, our plan for how to address the parking at Village Place as part of the project.
And to be, so this area, part of what we're going to look at is also the drainage. And so we know that there's some drainage issues coming in that creates ice issues in the winter. But to be clear, this is also going to be corresponding with the Kaufman Street project that we're going to be going under construction on from basically, Long's Peak to First and the Kaufman project. So there's going to be a lot of construction in this area over the next probably two to three years.
All right, I don't see any questions. So let's go on to item number six, items for input to LHA Board of Commissioners. A is property tax exemption policy.
So I will take this one as well. So on February 24th, we're planning to take the property tax exemption policy to the Board of Commissioners. Basically, it's been common practice for housing authorities to extend property tax exemptions to partnerships that they work on with in developing affordable housing. But the point of this, and is becoming more more solid or more common practice, is to really leverage that to benefit affordable housing more overall. So what this property tax exemption policy essentially does is develop a calculation for what the fee should be to participate in the tax exemption based on the number of highly affordable units, if there's permanent supportive housing involved, basically having a scale to provide those benefits to affordable housing developers. So the scale, the calculation is shown in here. I will just to ground the discussion, the two projects that we have going forward, the Sunset Heights project and Chrisman will receive a tax exemption as part of their projects. And so they will fall into this calculation formula. And specifically, Sunset Heights is permanent supportive housing, and they are LHA is partnering in both projects. So then the application fees, we can consider waiving those. So that's just kind of how the first two upcoming projects could be have their tax exemption applied in this case. So is there any questions on this? Is there any feedback on it?
Go ahead, Lauren. I think you're on mute, Lauren.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
When my headset dies, then it all gets wonky. Sorry about that. Are we only looking at enacting like a fee to replace the lost revenue, or are we looking at other development terms like, you know, a right of first refusal or a right to purchase or to take over management, something that would get us in the door in an ownership capacity down the line?
So I think this is for development partners that LHA is working with. So that's kind of earlier in the process. So at that point, those aspects might be negotiated separately. I think this is really just, this is an incentive for affordable housing developers, obviously. And this is just trying to incent more affordable units or more highly affordable units. Mm-hmm. So at this point, it's definitely not part of the right of first refusal or other aspects such as that are not included in this property tax exemption policy. Is that something that you've seen in the past, or are we thinking creatively about how this could?
I just know BCHA has partnered with private developers before to lend their tax exemption. And as part of the terms, you know, we might have a right of first refusal or right to purchase later down the line so that we can take over either in, or step into the investor right. shoes or take over property management, just ways to make sure that the affordability stays in perpetuity. Because some of these can come out of affordability down the line. And one of our goals is to make sure that doesn't happen. And
right.
so one tool is for us to eventually take it over. So that if the people who built it, the private developers, if they want to get out,
right.
they have an option to do so. And then we have a way to keep it affordable. I'm happy to talk to you more about that later.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that this policy is for... it's when LHA is extending the tax exemption policy. So it is not explicitly in here in that form, but that assumes that we are partnering in some way. And then we have that opportunity to do that, but let's chat about that.
Okay.
Karen or Harold, do you have any questions or input on that?
Yeah, no, I was kind of thinking through this because, you know, we're slightly different in that we have the development side, but then we have what we're doing from the affordability side as the city in terms of the 12% requirements, investments that we make. And so there's a piece in there that we might need to think about is, depending on what it is, you know, we have the 30-year affordability clauses and things like that. We might want to see how we bring in the first right of refusal, but yeah, we do that definitely from an LHA standpoint, and on the ARPA funds, we'll definitely have that as part of the agreements. But yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, Molly.
Okay.
Good suggestion.
Jean, you had your hand up. Oh, you're on mute.
Yeah, Harold just addressed my concern.
So the value, so the in the formula number two, it has that 7.15% update as needed. Is that like a set kind of percentage that is common in the sort of partnership fee, or how was that calculated or determined?
So I do have to refer back to our CFO's specifics on the tax calculation piece on this. So I know that the, let me look into that further, because I think my information from our CFO is on the mill levy piece that is already, the 2021 update is coming. Let me check on that 7.15 and get you some more detail on that.
Okay.
I don't want to misspeak on it without referring back to the, you know.
That's fine. And then the other thing, so the partnership fee is then this paid over 15 years as well, kind of the compliance period. It's kind of unclear. Or is it a one? Is it a lump sum amount?
So I know that it's going to be applied after the tax credits are in. Let me check on what makes most sense is that as well, because we don't specify. So I'm wondering if there's an opportunity to do one or the other, depending on kind of how, in some cases, the fee is going to be quite small, like for Sunset Heights, compared to if it's being extended to something else that has a different affordability range, it might be much larger. So let me see if there's flexibility in that.
Sorry. I thought we were trying to build flexibility and to do either or depending on the value. That's what I'm remembering from that conversation. So you didn't want to lose a project if that number was too big.
Right.
Then negotiate payments on it over time, or if it was small enough, you just took it.
Okay. And in full disclosure, I'm inheriting from Kathy, so I do have to refer back to some of her prior discussions. So we'll get you answers though.
But, and I think it's good input in terms of what we need to do. So this is why it's really valuable to bring these items to the advisory board before we take this to the board of commissioners. So obviously that's something that we'll want to consider how to incorporate in the policy. If indeed that flexibility or how those payments will be made. Mm-hmm.
And is this opportunity only for private developers who are doing 100% some kind of affordable, or does this include developments that have a market rate piece?
Well, it could be either. However, LHA is the common thread. So it needs to be something that where LHA will be managing it eventually. It's an LHA co-development project. So it's not going to be extended to any affordable housing developer.
Okay. So if Element were to come in and they were just going to do a straight affordable housing development and they weren't partnering with us in any way, they could not apply for this.
Yeah, probably not.
Okay. And then market rate, obviously they have the fee in lieu option if they don't want to do the affordability.
Correct. Right.
Okay. So this is just another tool to try to encourage them to partner with LHA instead of going that route. Okay.
Yeah. And leverage a position for LHA in the future, whether it's management or whatever it is.
I think it's
a good idea. To kind of bring you full circle, so if we were looking at a development project similar to what we did with Fall River or Spring Creek, we would probably, with our ARPA dollars that we're putting in, probably only get, what, Molly, one project? Maybe one, based on our ARPA allocation. What we're actually doing is leveraging, like, hopefully 6 to 7 projects with our ARPA allocation. In this development model where it's a partnership with a private development entity of which we then take ownership in the future. So what we're trying to do is maximize the value of the ARPA dollars, combine it with all of these things as we're bringing in to get more projects.
Okay.
And then getting to your point, how do we leverage it? And we need to clear that up. Some really good information coming from this conversation.
Let's go on to the next item. Number 7, items not part of the LHA work plan goals. This is the one that's just always on the agenda. Is that right, Karen?
Yeah. Correct. So this is one of the standard items, and we didn't have anything listed there. So, but if indeed if the advisory board has anything, we are, just as a FYI, is that we have yet to take those, the LHA goals that you have provided input on to the Board of Commissioners for final adoption, but that is planned to go on February 24th. So that's a standard item, and we didn't have anything to add.
Go ahead, Lauren.
I was just gonna say, just circling back to last month, I get to stay, yay.
Oh,
right. Yeah, we didn't talk about that at all.
Okay. I wait till the end, but
I have a note on other business.
Yeah, I figured it would be there, but inquiring minds probably want to know. So
So it was determined that since we don't fall within the city charter, we're still part of the Longmont Housing Authority Board of Commissioners. Lauren is able to stay even though she moved out of the city.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah,
I do.
I do actually have something for other business. It's we're all gonna have to figure this out today and tomorrow. The county, Boulder County Public Health, on Friday, February 18th, they're going to, the universal masking ordinance ends on the February 18th, Friday, February 18th. And so it's kind of interesting in, there's some connects, there's some pieces in here that we're gonna have to look at where there still may be some requirements and it's unclear based on the federal component, because they still, they said like head starts and things like that still have a requirement. So we're gonna have to be looking into this week and figuring it out by Friday, because it looks like Friday it's all going to be lifted.
And the state order about masking for non-vaccinated persons 11 and older is still technically in effect. So, but how do you enforce it is the question.
Yeah, because the state was kind of pushing it to the counties too, which was creating a lot of chaos, because Denver dropped it, counties started dropping it. We just know that it changes on Friday, so we'll be getting that communication out for all of our residents and talking about what that means for us.
Yeah, as well as St. Vrain Valley School District is dropping their requirement as well in line with COVID.
Harold, I've got a question about that. Boulder County is dropping the mask mandate, and I understand the glitch with the federal requirement. But if there is a case that a resident, if a resident becomes ill, and we have a case of COVID here, I'd like to know what that procedure is going to be without the mask mandate. Would it be the same as, you know, isolate, lock the community areas? And
we've got to see the order and see what's in place. We've got to move through that. We will notify you all the same way. We will say, you know, we strongly recommend that folks wear masks and so on and so forth. But in terms of what we can and can't leave open and close, we're going to have to understand these health orders. So can't answer some of it other than the notifications will still come as we're aware of it. Not that we're always aware of it, because they're so far behind in processing tests. Sometimes we don't hear about it until much later.
I think something like that too, Gene, the public health department from the county will reach out to that person individually. And this is assuming that they got, you know, a PCR test and not one of the stay-at-home tests either. All right, so let's go on to number 8, LHA report, a update on operations. One is occupancy report. Is that you, Lisa?
Yes, it is. Okay. So I'm excited to say we finally reached 90%, 97% occupied, which is the highest it's been since I started. So we are working quicker to fill these vacants. It's helped that we have more staff to help with these. Going through some of the properties, just a quick update. Aspen Meadows neighborhood, both PVV units that are vacant do have people reserved on them. We're just working through the process, getting them qualified. And the one unit that's been down due to meth contamination, we expect that to be back and available on 4-1. With that, we're going to make that a manager's unit. So the manager for Aspen Meadows and Aspen Senior will probably be moving into that unit to have a presence on that site, because Aspen Meadows neighborhood has now our number one call for service, even though we don't get a lot of calls. It's the family property, a lot of kids, a lot more people in a smaller condensed area. So we figured having a management presence will help with those calls for service, and then it will help her be more involved in that community. Aspen Meadows Senior is completely occupied. Briarwoods, We've had the two units sitting empty for the city funded voucher program. Both those units do have people working through the system to get qualified for that. So hopefully here in the next couple of weeks, we will have both those occupied. Fall River, we have just one vacant from the eviction, and we know that there's going to be some damage in it. We're waiting for maintenance to go in and actually pull up floorboards and evaluate the whole complete situation for that one. The Hearthstone and the Lodge, they both have some vacants. We are working through the process to open their waitlist. We have moved through the complete waitlist we had opened later last year, and so we know we need to open it again to get more applicants. The suites, we're down to three vacants. MHP has their two rented now, and that will just leave the meth unit, which we have to, we're now looking to piece that together to get it completed, because all of our construction bids were coming in the 100,000 plus range, which insurance won't cover all of that. So I'm working with a few others within the city, and we're gonna look to piece it, do each item separately, the drywall separately, then the flooring separately, HVAC separately, to get that in, completed and under budget, hopefully in the next 8 weeks. Spring Creek has four vacants, working on a couple transfers, one meth unit we're waiting for testing on, and we've just reopened their wait list along with Village Place. They have one vacant and we've reopened their wait list. Any questions on the occupancy? Okay, we're gonna move into the property updates. There's quite a few this time. So we brought on a new maintenance tech for Aspen Meadows campus. So that's Aspen Meadows Senior and Aspen Meadows Neighborhood. He was a transfer from the city. He was a janitor with the city, has a lot of maintenance experience, and residents are enjoying him and he's working out great. He's actually been covering four properties. One of our maintenance techs fell at home on the ice and broke his arm in multiple spots, so he will be out for 6 to 8 weeks. So we are down a man. But Alvin, who we hired, is helping out and covering the four properties. Molly, did you want to? Oh, sorry. So successful housing voucher waitlist. So we did open the Section 8 waitlist about 3 weeks ago, January 26th. We received over 1,100 people who applied that day in person and via email for 150 spots. That was actually an amazing day. It went a lot smoother than we planned. We had multiple volunteers and repurposed people from other departments. The senior center came over and really helped me out because LHA was down due to COVID. We had a lot of people out with being ill, COVID, sick. So Senior Center helped, stepped up, helped us out, and it was a successful day.
The towing company. On that one, oh, actually, yeah. Lisa. So if somebody was on the wait list previously for the Housing Choice Voucher, are they, does it get rolled over to this one as well? Or you, this is like, once we open the wait list, everybody, yes. Okay, all right.
We had extinguished our previous wait list. We did do, last year we had sent out letters to all those on the wait list, let them know, you know, if you were still interested in it, cause it kind of got stagnant. It was from 2018. So a lot of the information we had was not correct, but we did send courtesy mailings out last year, got the wait list narrowed down to a manageable amount by doing that. And then we've reached out to everybody, either qualified them, they're pending a voucher. And it was time to open up and get that wait list current.
Okay. And this is also lottery based, right?
Correct.
Correct, yeah, okay.
And so we only took 150 names for that wait list because that is kind of what we anticipate we may be able to accommodate in a year. And then once that is exhausted, we'll open it again. So hopefully we'll be opening our wait list annually. And we did notify all those who applied this time that it will be dumped annually and then recreated.
Okay.
And then as I touched on earlier, we have brought in a towing company, parking lot management. And this really has a lot to do with Village Place, Aspen Meadows Neighborhood, and the Homestead properties. We see a lot of vehicles from outside the community in these areas being parked in our parking lot. sometimes being abandoned. Village Place gets a lot of the downtown traffic. So just taking up from the residents being able to park in their own community. We have 24/7 monitoring of these parking lots. They'll do drive-throughs daily, at nights, after hours, weekends, just to keep and maintain that everybody who's parking there does have a parking permit. All the residents will be getting parking permits this week and next week. We set up meetings with each of the communities to kind of go through the process. What happens, you know, if they lose their permit? What happens if they forgot to register their car? We have a lot of things that we can do to prevent a resident's car from being towed. So if a resident, say, they forgot to register their car, or they registered it online and they're waiting for it to come in the mail and their tags are expired and they're scared they're going to get towed, LHA, all my managers have access to the system with this monitoring company to go in and put that resident's car as a do not tow. So we can mark if it's expired by, you know, 2 weeks that they're not towed because they're waiting for it. They've provided documentation. It also helps us for when we evict a resident. If that resident has been trespassed from the property, we can put their license plate in as an immediate tow if it's spotted on site, because they are trespassed from the community. So we have a lot of things like that that we can do and work with the company. And the residents, we provided a list of all of their license plates to the company. So say the resident forgot to put their parking permit or it fell down, the company will look for it. They'll run the plate to see if it's matched to a residence, if it's in our system, and give them a warning the first time. So, and then we have it also set up that if they have a flat tire, they're not automatically towed. They get a warning notice. If their registration's expired and we didn't put it as a do not tow because they didn't notify us, or they just lapsed and they don't want to say anything, they also get a warning notice for 48 hours. So there's a lot of things with this, and then the managers will get an email as well when somebody gets a warning. If a car is towed immediately because it parked in a fire zone, it was parked in a handicap without a handicap placard, management gets an email immediately letting them know when and why a vehicle was towed.
Now, do we pay a fee for this service, or are they just making other money from the impound fees?
Correct. And they do other properties here in Longmont. They're doing Roosevelt Park, Centennial, and a few other companies as well.
Lisa?
Yes.
I like what I'm hearing in terms of the manager and this contractor interaction. And would I be in order, assuming that if a resident sees a car in the wrong place, or a strange car or whatever, and reports that to the manager can have this company follow up?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a two-way street. Okay.
Yes. And we'll go through this in the resident meetings. Like I believe yours is tomorrow. I'll be there. The residents can even call in to the, if it's after hours and they see suspicious vehicle parked on site, they can call the emergency maintenance line. And Dave and I have access to have a tow nights and weekends as well.
Awesome.
So,
okay, great.
Next item is LHA is expanding the revenue generating activities. So the city has an inclusionary housing plan, and a lot of these market rate communities don't know how to qualify people to make sure they meet the 50%, 60%, or whatever designated AMI that they're electing for that inclusionary housing. So LHA will be doing some of their file compliance and helping qualifying those tenants for a fee. We've got our first company that's reached out to us that we're gonna start qualifying tenants at $100 a file.
Good.
So that we can, so we'll be generating revenue off of that as well. It's a new thing. Right. Molly and I really walked through, talked with them. Kathy was part of these talks. And I just think it's an easy way for LHA to make some money off of something all of my staff is qualified to do.
There you go.
And it takes us a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one is working on a process to coordinate response when residents send multiple communications with multiple parties. Karen, I don't know if you want to touch on this a little bit. This is when more of when residents reach out to board members, city council members, Herald, they're not following the proper chain of command. So we have a lot of, not a lot, but a handful of residents who take the initiative to send emails, call, try to go over the property manager's head, over my head, over Harold's head, or other ways, trying to get their items answered for very minute things. And we're trying to really focus on pushing them back to the property manager. You need to talk to your manager. These are what the managers are here to do. Go to your manager. If your manager doesn't solve your situation or give you, you know, what you need within a reasonable time, then come to me. And then the next step. So we're really trying to educate them on those steps. I know Michelle and others have been redirecting them. Go see your property manager.
You know, and what I would add to what Lisa said is that, so these, you know, we're customized. So we're bringing people together as situations arise. So there'll be some level of customization, you know, kind of depending on what the situation is. But when it gets to that point where, again, there are just could be advisory board members, could be board of commission members, it could be a variety of folks. So when those kinds of things happen, then we have this team that comes together and said, okay, so how are we going to coordinate what comes in and what that response is, so that we do have a more coordinated response. So so that we've utilized that in a couple situations. I'm sure we will continue to utilize that. But again, it's really kind of bringing in folks that are involved maybe with this particular resident to come up with what would be the, we want to respond obviously to the concerns, but how to do that in a way that is more coordinated than scattershot like it's been in the past. So Lisa, I don't know, so I know we're about at 9:30, so I don't know if there, what else you want to indicate on, point out in the report, and then I think we want to turn over to Kendra for the financials.
Okay, and just to piggyback off that, one of the items on the suites, we had a joint meeting with Senior Services, Mental Health Partners, MHP, and all three agencies are working together when we have these types of scenarios. And MHP has agreed to consult on certain situations, even with non-MHP residents, so that we can have that united, at the suites, the united agreeance of how to go about each situation. And then Spring Creek Senior Services provided some grief counseling or a grief meeting for our residents. They have had a couple residents pass pretty quickly and suddenly all at once. So Senior Services did step in and provide some grief support. We also, during one of the situations, public safety was a big thing. They had the chaplain come in along with victim services just to comfort the residents, because it was they lost a resident who was very involved in the community. And it was a sudden. So any questions related to the properties, the occupancy items going on?
I don't see any. Thanks, Lisa. Kendra, take it away.
So I was hoping this month that when you got the AR receivable, it would like look like it was down, but it doesn't, because we had a meth unit at AMN that we ended up charging the meth costs for. So that did bring it up. We did do an allowance for that at 75%, because, but one of the things we want to get geared towards is actually sending these to collections, because the problem is, even with us, when we bring somebody in, if we're not sending them to collections, it's not on their background. It's not on, so we have no idea that this person completely ruined a unit with meth. So I know we are, Lisa and I need to get together to find a collection agency that will take this on for us. And then I know this resident received the letter in December. So within the next, I think it's 90 days within our bad debt policy to make sure that we get them turned over to collections. And we'll work on how that process looks. But most of the other properties look much better. We are going to start looking at the prepaid balances. And I know that community managers are reaching out to these individuals to say, hey, your next payment, reduce it by $50 because you paid, you know, overpaid in a previous period. But if that doesn't work, what we may just do is issue checks to the residents so we can get the balances cleared up and then they can get that money back in their pocket. Some of this is still due to, especially with the suites, just being on the wrong ledgers. And I know Corinne is working diligently to get through all of the 70 plus residents that, that need their ledgers looked at. Does anybody have any questions on the AR side?
So on Aspen Meadow, Aspen Meadows neighborhood, the current is also high as well, 43,000. And the over 90 days is 39,000.
Well, the current includes all. The current balance is all, and then it divides it out.
Gotcha. So you're 0 to 30. Okay.
Yeah, so I know it's some of those
three. I follow you now. I thought it was current, like it's owed today. It was just billed currently.
Yeah, okay. No worries. I look at that report every time. I'm like, wait, oh wait, I gotta remember it.
Okay.
So yeah. We will see some anomalies in the coming months for the Hearthstone and the Lodge. Mainly because we just received the Lodge's contract. So we just finally got paid for January and February vouchers. We still have not received the Hearthstone. Apparently HUD is still trying to find funding. So they found funding for the Lodge this last week. We got that taken care of, but we're still waiting on the Hearthstone's contract, which expired in January. So we'll see some anomalies in the coming months that those will increase, but then once we get payment, they'll go back down. So the financials, this is the end of year, book the depreciation, all the interest. So it looks like a big loss, which is actually what the investor likes to see on their side for tax purposes. But all of the properties had net income and we have a pretty good cash flow where I think almost every property is probably gonna have cash flow surplus. So we'll have cash flow payments this year on most all properties, whether it's paying developer fees or starting to pay certain loans down. We'll look at the priority order to see, usually it's developer fees are first and then from there it trickles down depending on the property. Does anybody have any questions on the financials?
Yeah, I want to just give a big shout out to Kendra and the team and all the property managers, because if you remember where we were two budgets ago, was it, Kendra, when everything was budgeted in the negative and we were struggling to find money, and to see where now every one of the properties are, I mean, they're cash flowing from a cash perspective, but from a depreciation, they're in the negative, which is how the system is built. The fact that we're seeing this quickly is really a testament to the work that all of these folks have been doing. So, and it's make the future budgets easier. So great work, Kendra and team, and Lisa and everyone doing this.
Great job. And then just the LHA Consolidated, is that really like the administrative side, right?
LHA Consolidated consists of Briarwood, anything that's wrapped into LHA's financials. So it's Briarwood Office, the 615 Main, it's all of the Prairie Village. I think Prairie Village, I get LHDC and LHA mixed up unless I look at them, but it's all of that consolidated into one. So it'll include the Briarwood along with the 615 but I separated those out on the report so you can see exactly how those properties are doing since they're specific.
Gotcha. Okay.
But that might not have all of the balances because we're still working on actually getting those. LHDC's audit is next, which is the 20th. We have to get everything submitted by the 22nd, and then LHA follows suit after that.
Okay.
So we're still working on going through the trial balance and making sure everything's recorded. So those numbers will change.
Anything else? Anything? Executive Director report? I think you're on mute,
Aaron. Yeah, I'm having all sorts of computer issues today. No, I really don't have anything other than, you know, what I talked about with in terms of the county health orders and how we're going to work through those at this point. You know, I will tell you, we're making progress in hiring. We didn't announce, did you already announce our new addition, Molly, Karen?
Not yet, because it's still in conditional status.
Oh, okay.
But we've made a conditional offer, yes.
Yeah, so.
to our housing choice voucher specialist.
Yeah, so we're moving through all of these issues. It continues to still be an issue, but it's an issue now, both sides of the house, the city and the housing authority, but we're making progress slowly. But other than that, nothing really to report. They covered it all.
Okay, moving then on to number nine. Any other business that we haven't discussed already? Go ahead, Arlene.
So I have a question. I think it's probably for Harold. I'm not sure. And this is totally off the wall. That sign that's down there on the property at the railroad tracks in 21st. Now, I haven't been by there today, but yesterday it still had graffiti on it. I think that that's starting to make the whole area look trashy. You know, and I live east of there. And I think it reflects on all of us. So this is the second time that it's been like that. Is there a way to get them to either straight, you know, have a smaller sign, put a camera on it, or do something about keeping that so it doesn't trash up the area like it is?
Yeah, so we have to go through code on those issues from a sign ordinance perspective and what they can and can't do. So yeah, I'm just to the east. I've actually been out of town, so I'll see it again when I leave this meeting, and I'll get with code enforcement. But in terms of requiring things like cameras, we can't make them do that, but we can definitely call code and our graffiti removal program to look into this. Part of it is, just so you know, we got a little behind. We had a pretty significant event ago, and so, but we'll get that into them. So.
Okay.
We're just 7 minutes over, so we'll adjourn at 9:37, and then next meeting is scheduled for March 15th at 9 a.m. Bye, all.
Everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.